Vibe Astrology.
Welcome, everyone, to Essential Astrology for Deliberate Creators. This is Kim Faulkner. I'm here with Jeanette Ma, and this is part two of our exploration of the planets. The call was getting a little long, so we've cut it in half for you. Here's part two. It's going to be Mars out through Pluto. Okay, so we talked a bit about Mars. Mars rules Aries and Scorpio and is linked to the first and the eighth house. And the keywords around Mars is this will to act. I see Mars as what gets us out of bed in the morning. And people will do that in different ways. And probably linked to their to where their Mars is. Someone with Mars in Aries, these are the people that throw back the covers and jump out into the new day. Maybe if Mars is in a more thoughtful sign, not that Aries isn't thoughtful, but maybe an air sign, they're going to muse and they're going to be thinking of things in bed. They're going to lay around for a little while and plan it out in their mind first. And those in a water sign are just going to put the pillow with their head and go, no, back to sleep, back to sleep. And earth signs might have a ritual or a pattern around how they want to get up out of bed. Mars and Taurus, you probably have to drag out of bed, I think, because they are like, so it's the getting out of bed is a metaphor for how we initiate something in life, how we start things. Your Mars is your engine, and it's what gets you going into new things in your life, pushes you into new territory. It's the real go-getter. It's your inner warrior. If you are feeling in the kind of lost in the woods and not certain where to go, or you're not happy about what's happening in your life and it's starting to feel closing in, we get the light of fire under Mars. Find a way to get Mars boosting, because that wakes up your warrior. And let's just pretend you're on the journey and the, you know, it's been pouring rain and everybody's sitting around the camp and they're all just, you know, eating beans out of a tin and nobody's very happy. Wake up your warrior and he will have a plan. It may be a crazy plan. It may be reckless, but he is going to get things moving. You're not going to be sitting in the rain anymore. So that's, you can feel my energy gets excited just talking about Mars, because it evokes Mars. And yeah, he gets really wound up.
I was thinking about how my Mars is in Virgo, and from what you just said, that sounds, well, that's pretty much what I do when I wake up. I start thinking about the day ahead and kind of planning and organizing and seeing how it's going to come together. And it's not unusual for me to start entertaining what could go wrong. And that's one of my personal deliberate creation practices, to make a point of seeing things going well, or to tune into something positive before I start the day, because it's easy for me to just, okay, plan ahead and see where there could be trouble. And I know better than to begin a day like that. But that makes a lot of sense considering my Mars placement, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And if we look at Will Smith, his Mars is in Virgo as well. And I've never been there in the morning when he woke up, so I can't say personally what he does. But I'm guessing he'd be a lot like you, especially when he's so LOA savvy. I'm guessing he might even pull a list out from under the pillow and start reading through his positive aspects, mm-hmm. ideas. And because you're right, the nature of Mars in Virgo, the warrior has a very discerning eye, and it can, if you don't give him enough to do, if you don't mm-hmm. set him on the path, he can get critical and he can get cranky. And this is a Mars that you need to, where Mars is, we got to really keep moving. This is powerful energetic force. It's like you've got the engine on, and it's going to push the train in some direction. So you want to put some light of consciousness on that. But yeah, there can, I think that's a great example. My Mars is also in an earth sign. It's in Capricorn. And I start the day thinking about what I have accomplished and what I will accomplish. It's very achievement oriented, very practical, and very, and it doesn't have to be, you know, world domination achievement. I can think of, wow, I got all that mulch spread yesterday. Good on you. Kim. And today I can plan out the ceiling. It might just be little stuff like maybe I'll wash the window in the sunroom. And then, you know, I'll get this many, I'll get this chapter edited, or I'll, you know, that sort of thing. You got that post up well yesterday. You know, this will be fun tomorrow. This is all going well. It's a kind of a cheering section, practical outlook. Whereas Mars in Pisces might just daydream and visualize about a beautiful encounter or a magical place. It gets very dreamy, it gets very soft. It might get very romantic. Mars is our sexual energy in the sense of how we drive it forward. There's a strong sexual dynamic to both Venus and Mars, which makes sense, of course. It's a symbol of male and female. And that's not a mistake. It's meant to be. And where Venus is our sexual energy as we attract, Mars is the where we push it out into the world. So there's a strong dynamic between those two. And yes, so Mars links powerfully with that sense of purpose, path, and power that we discussed before. So the sun gets the idea of, okay, this is who I am. And Mars says, okay, let's get you there. Let's move it there. He's what gets us going. Okay, Jupiter is next. And Jupiter, again, dual rulership, rules Sagittarius and Pisces. So he's linked to the 9th and the 12th house. Jupiter, the principle of Jupiter is expansion. Think of Jupiter up there on Mount Olympus. And this is big energy, big confidence, we've got some fabulous articles in the library about Jupiter and confidence and abundance. But Jupiter is where we make things bigger. And if we want to boost our manifesting skills, if we want to increase our levels of joy, if we want to blast through those glass ceilings, their set points, go to Jupiter. Find where Jupiter is, because this is where if we're tuned in, it's where we're feeling lucky, where we feel like we can really make things blossom and expand.
Is this still a personal planet?
We're outside the personal planets now. Good point. We leave the personal planets behind with Mars. Jupiter and Saturn, which are in the middle kind of orbit there, ring of orbit, we consider social planets, so it's very much in our social, it's still conscious, but not so much personal, more social. And then outside of that, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, we look at as transpersonal and the outer planets. Jupiter definitely links to our connection with other people in, it's the celebrity planet. And here, if we look at Will's chart, we see Jupiter in Virgo in the third house again. He's got such a busy third house. So his desire for expansion is very much motivated by his ideas and how he thinks of things. And you'll see him talking in this montage, and he'll actually point his finger at his head, and you have to think the way I think of it. And I'm just going, oh, you Jupiter, you. And it's gorgeous. It's beautiful to see. So Jupiter's also Jove, jovial, or happiness. We can really go to Jupiter and amp things up. Jupiter in Virgo, again, can be looking at the small, detailed aspects of life and think, how can I expand things here? How can I bring this out into a bigger picture? Make it more abundant. Jupiter is always wanting to expand. He's shooting out there into the unknown and embracing those new horizons.
So, Kim, if a deliberate creator was looking to enhance their abundance of a variety of types, not just financial, but abundance in general, would it be wise to look to harness our Jupiter energy?
Absolutely. I think that the idea is to honor that energy. Find where our Jupiter is and go there and do something to... the metaphor is the sacrifice where we put something on the altar of the gods. And all that means is go to that area of life and do something that feels good, that feels fun. Like give yourself something in that area of life. So if you have Jupiter in the seventh house of relationship, go do something with someone. Have a shared experience. Expand your relationships. Maybe you've got one kind of insular relationship. Make a new friend. Make a new connection where you're going to do things together. Same with the 11th house of friendship. If it's in the 5th house, you might want to expand your creativity. That's honoring Jupiter there.
Or go gambling. Could we go
yes.
gambling?
Yes. Ooh, and you might feel lucky. You might.
I'm thinking about how Abraham's message so often to deliberate creators is it boils down to get happy.
Yes.
So if we were looking to follow that advice, Jupiter could lead us there, it sounds like.
Definitely. Definitely. I think the true, when we're truly happy, we are more and becoming more and more authentic and more living our core values. That's what makes
us
happy. Sun, everything, every planet in the chart, remember, is seeking outer manifestation. But some of them, like when we get out of balance, when we are doing, maybe we're just doing all Saturn and it's starting to feel like way too much responsibility and shoulds and tolerations. And I'm not saying that's what Saturn is, but I think an unbalanced, unhappy Saturn with nothing else coming along for the ride is going to start to feel very oppressed. Too much of any one thing is going to feel too much, or too much of the moon, and we fall into this brooding, emotive, can't see any picture. Too much sun, and we get sunburned. We just get, you know, we are blinding everything around us, and we're not integrating other parts. The idea is to allow for everything, exclude nothing. And that can be a very big ask. So what we do in deliberate creation, I think, is that we look at the planets individually and think, well, how am I living this? At the end of our talk, we're going to run through that exercise, Jeanette, that we like to do about to measure how much we're doing each planet and see where we want to maybe put some attention.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I love doing that. So we'll run that through in the next talk. But I'm getting all circular here, but to bring it back to your question is, yes, I think if we're like we don't know quite where to go and we want to, things need expanding, let's look at Jupiter. Let's go there and find a way to honor that energy. Is that making sense?
It does. That'll be fun to play with.
Yeah. If Jupiter was on the ascendant, because remember the ascendant's the shop window, what we show the world, boosting Jupiter might be going out and getting a whole new style, a new wardrobe. It might be getting a new tattoo. It might be getting new earrings, which are more changeable. It might be, depending on what sign it's in, it's you get the idea of just to go to that area of life. Feed it. How do you feed your energy? The first thing we need to know is what is our energy like? And that's what the astrology is telling us. And then it's up to us to seek, okay, who's hungry? who needs a big support here? Okay, so Saturn, which it's really important to understand Saturn because, again, Saturn gets a lot of bad press. People kind of know a little bit about Saturn. They think, oh, that's going to mean hard work and that's going to mean, you know, difficulties or blocks. I'm going to tell you this story briefly. One of my early teachers, Joanne Wickenburg, probably 40 years ago, told this metaphor, and I've never forgotten it. It's a wonderful way to think of Saturn. She said, picture this, regardless of what your belief system is, before you incarnate, you're sitting there looking down on your potential life. You're looking down at the chart that you're creating, because it's going to be a map of your energy signature. It's going to line you up with that moment of time that you're born, and this is going to be your vibration. And you're looking at that chart, and it's blank to start with, and you think, all right, next lifetime, what do I really want to get right? Where do I really want to put my focus?
I love this.
I know. I get goosebumps. Joanne, thank you. She's just a brilliant woman. And where do I want to make darn certain I'm going to put my energy and focus? I'm not going to be able to ignore it. And that is the house and the sign and the aspect placement that you will put your Saturn. Your Saturn is not, now maybe the first 30 years before your Saturn return, you're going to try to ignore it, or you're going to project it out there onto to other people of authority. But your Saturn ultimately is where you will not ignore your life. And that's why it's there. And that's why it gets a little bit of bad press, because it won't go away. And we tend to want to resist it. No, do I have to do that? Well, obviously there was this history, this lifetime history of resistance or ignoring. Otherwise we wouldn't have put it there to make sure that we couldn't. So where Saturn is in your chart and by sign, I would say please trust your higher self and your higher guidance, your inner guidance, because it's you put it there for a reason. And yes, Saturn does, it is a principle of focus. It contracts things and puts a strong focus on it so that we can actually accomplish something in that area of life. We can learn it, we can get it right. And the sooner that you embrace that Saturn and go there and say, okay, I'm going to roll up my sleeves, I'm ready to work, and I'm ready to face this. And at first, it can be very frightening. I'll give you a personal example, because it's a good one. I have Saturn in the third house of communication. Prior to my first Saturn return, so what, that's the first 29 years of my life, I was an absolute social cripple. I could not speak to other people, to group. It would have been impossible to ever hear me speak in front of a group, because I would never put myself in a position where I had to do that. It was so terrifying. And my sense of ability to have anything of any import to say, my questioning of that I even had an intellect, let alone a high or low one, was so overpowering that, yeah, it was absolutely crippling. The self-esteem around in intelligence, speaking, writing, was so low, it didn't even appear on the graph. That was just a blank. And it made it hard to be, okay, I got three planets in Gemini.
Oh, wow.
So my life, I remember a teacher, my second grade teacher, told my mother that she'd never seen a child more sad. And I'm well enough. I've never told this story. And the sadness was because I had no way of, my whole life was about communication and I couldn't do it.
Wow.
And it was,
Talk about resistance,
fear, conflict, all around. A lot of it was around father who became Saturn, who said, you know, shut up. Yeah, and anyway, we won't even go there. But there wasn't, So Saturn can be a place in the chart where things start out a little shaky for damn good reason. Because what did I do? My first Saturn return, building up towards the Saturn return, I started, high school, studying zero. I never opened a book. I'm really not certain how I graduated, but somehow I took those exams and graduated from high school. There was no participation whatsoever I daydreamed. I just looked out the window and imagined things. And then as I got older, I just watched for some hot guy to walk by. It was all imagination. There was no participation. So education, third house is early education. So anyway, then something started to tweak and I somehow got the smidgen of confidence to take a correspondence. They didn't have the internet then, a correspondence course. And I think my first one was in vet nursing, and I struggled through that, because obviously not thinking that I was able or capable made it really hard. Anyway, started taking courses. By the time I had my first Saturn return, I was starting it. I had my son. He was my Saturn return. And that's a very empowering situation. And I became mother. I became responsible for another being. I was honoring Saturn in a certain way. It's in Scorpio, so it's very, my Saturn's in Scorpio. The mother-child bond is very intimate. And so I kind of boosted Saturn in that way, and I started taking more courses and more courses. And where we find Saturn is we tend to overcompensate. We overwork that area because, again, we're putting focus there because we feel weak or inadequate or things aren't flourishing in that area of life. It's, remember, it's our guarantee to make things flourish. Anyway, it's just, and of course the third house is writing. And it was probably 20 years ago that I started writing fiction, and really only maybe 5 or 6 years ago that I started publishing fiction. And of course, now I'm like seven novels and two novellas later, with 4 or 5 projects in being shopped. Anyway, what I'm saying is Saturn turns lead to gold. It is your alchemy. This is what the alchemists were talking about. They were taking something that was your weakest link, and it's turning it into your gold.
That is really cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Well, you're welcome. And I know we just spent a lot of time on Saturn, but I just feel it's so important that you understand your Saturn. You don't fight it or resist it, but start to realize what's really going on there. And it's not somebody out there that's making you do something. You're the one who put Saturn in that house and sign in the first place. So don't blame anyone else. Get on board with your own plan.
This is a much more empowering way to look at it than someone who studied traditional astrology. I mean, it's really easy to collapse or feel victimized with what's going on with their Saturn. So that perspective feels so much more LOA friendly.
It is. And it's the truth. It is the Saturnian truth that got kind of missed out in the interpretations over the years, which is difficult. I recommend that you do not read random non-LOA descriptions of your Saturn transits, or you just go hide under the bed.
Right. Yeah.
They're not telling a different story. And it's not one that's really going to be quite so empowering. It's sort of like, if you survive this... So, yeah, make friends with Saturn. Appreciate what you have brought to yourself there. Because it's pretty amazing.
I love the lead to gold analogy. That's brilliant. Thank you.
Okay, as we leave Saturn, we're moving into the transpersonal planets. And again, the energies of these, if you think about it, they're much slower moving and they become generational. So you're born, around the time you're born, everybody's got Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, particularly Pluto, in the same sign. Obviously, they're going to fall in different houses depending on what time of day you're born, but they're going to be in the same sign. So it becomes less personal. Remember, the further we get from the sun, the more unconscious, and we're looking more at social trends and big movements. But when one of these outer planets is connected to an inner planet, which we will talk about in the next call when we talk about the aspects, when it's scripted to interact with an inner planet, then it starts to become very personal. But for now, just in general, think of Uranus, which rules Aquarius. It's linked to Aquarius and the 11th house. keywords are around freedom and autonomy. This is almost the higher octave of Mars. Remember, Mars in Aries wants to be independent? Well, look out, Uranus. Really needs a lot of space. It's original genius ideas. It's outside the box. It's almost like a cosmic consciousness. And it's very exciting energy. It likes to excite. I always think of it as the magician who pulls the tablecloth out from under the beautiful crystal's placement. Only this is the really the magician's apprentice, and they don't know how to do it yet. So they yank, and everything crashes. But everything changes. It's linked to the Tower card in tarot, where we see, you know, all the old structures are crumbling so that something new can be awakened and born from it. So where Uranus is, think new, genius, breakthrough, breakout, outside the mold, dare to be different. When we look at Will's chart, we see it's right there with the sun, which we'll talk about more in the next call, but it's in the third house. And again, watch the montage of interviews and you will see that Uranian energy in him, because he, oh my gosh, go for the unrealistic, he says. He says it's not realistic to walk into a room and flip on a switch and the lights come on. But fortunately, Thomas Edison didn't think so. And he's saying, be that person who doesn't see blocks of and doesn't hear, that's not real, that can't happen.
I recall it, Will said in one of his interviews, 2 + 2 doesn't equal 4.
Yeah.
2 + 2 equals what I say it is.
Thank you. Yes! That's Uranus in the third house, conjunct the sun. Bingo. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So where we find Uranus, we can be like where we find Aquarius. If we get into our quirkier outside the box mode, we're more likely to feel in alignment with ourselves in that area of life. So look to Uranus for where it's okay to have shifting, sudden changes. Uranus brings surprise. So enjoy the surprise. Don't try to make it predictable. I have Uranus in the 11th house, and I have the dichotomy of friends. I have friends that are so incredibly different. You would never get them in the same room together without, I don't know what would happen. World War Z. It would be just be crazy. It would be crazy. And at first, this kind of concerned me. You know, what's wrong? How can I possibly be friends with this person and this utterly opposite person? I enjoy them both at separate times. Uranus in the 11th house of friends. You know, it's going to be outside the box. There will be sudden changes, sudden shifts, sudden surprises. So allow for that where Uranus is. With Neptune, we'll move on to Neptune now, which is a rules Pisces and linked to the 12th house. This is embodies the divine mysticism. It's behind the veil. It's linked very much to those feelings of the unknown and our connection to all life. It's where we seek the muse and our creative wellspring. It's a fantasy and imagination. It's the immersion in the collective unconscious. Where Neptune is, we get dreamy, we get imaginative. We look for that sense of union with the divine. Again, it's an outer planet, and we need to see links from Neptune to the personal planets to really get a feeling of how it acts out in our day-to-day life. But if we're starting to feel an existential angst, like we can't really understand, or we're starting to lose our faith in the unknown, going and nurturing our Neptune area of life by house and sign can change all that, can bring reunite us with that sense of infinite possibilities in life. I see Neptune as a image of the universe, the multiverse, the quantum field where everything is possible and no wave is collapsed. It's the sea of infinite possibilities. As you can see that it's nebulous. You can't even the description of it almost defies words. You're not going to pin this archetype down. You're not going to pin this part of you down. What you want to do with this part of you is allow for that feeling of connection. I like to say where Neptune is in the chart, this is the area of life where you want to find some sense of meditative connection. It might be with nature. It might be through yoga or meditation. It might be through just immersion in music. The Neptune technique is loosen your grip, let go, close your eyes, and drift away.
That's going to require someone to come up with some trust and just probably relaxing about life in general in order to practice that.
Yes, very much relaxing, letting go. Faith in the unknown future. If you can feel a sense of faith in the unknown future where your Neptune is, you've nailed it. Yeah. All right. Well, and coming to the wrap up with Pluto. Pluto rules Scorpio in the eighth house. And Pluto is all about death and rebirth. It is the, you know, life, death, life cycles of transformation. There is a lot of sense of change and power where the sun is personal power. Pluto brings it into this transpersonal sense of power. This is where we can connect to the magnificent power we have to create our world. It's that big. And a lot of people, their circuits fry when they tap into this energy, and this is why it represents transformation, because when you reach a new level of understanding, your old self dies, a new self is born. You're not who you were in the past. That's Pluto. That's the cycle of Pluto. Again, Pluto is linked very much with the erotic, not ordinary sex, but erotic in the ancient Greek sense of the word. Where, again, I've described this before, but where two or more people come together in such a way that there is lasting transformation. And it can be through art and through music and through theater. It can be through an intimate experience with another. But it's very powerful. It's not ordinary. It's not every day.
I just want to woohoo that.
Yes. Woohoo. And it's like, you know it when you feel it. You'll know it when you feel Pluto in play. So, all right. Well, that brings us full circle, because from Pluto's existential out there life, death, life, we are reborn into the sun again. And do think of all these archetypes as circular and interrelated. They're not in list form. Okay, so your work now is to go to your chart and identify where each of your planets are. Get a sense of what that part of you is. You can give it, think of it as a subpersonality. You can give it a name. This is my curious thinker, or this is my Athena warrior woman, or this is my librarian, or this is fine. Go ahead and give yourself some images of your inner pantheon of characters, and think about how you are expressing them and in what areas of life they are coming out.
I love this homework to get to know ourselves better.
Exactly. And the more familiar you become with your chart, and you might want to even look at another person's chart that you know. Might be a relationship, or might be, it could be a celebrity, like we're looking at Will. But you can start to think about, okay, well, my sun is in this house. This is where I need to shine in the world. And here's this person's over here. And you might gain a new understanding of that person. Jeanette, you gave us that example of your friend who's Aquarian and his need to shine. I don't know what house, we didn't talk about what house that was in, but just being in Aquarius, for him to feel authentic, he's got a vibe that, okay, I'm on the edge out there doing something very different. You may not understand it, but boy, is this me. Mm-hmm. kind of vibe. And that's authentic.
Which helps me understand him a lot better, because if I didn't know that about him, it would be easy to look at what at his choices and go, wow, that guy's crazy. That guy is honoring the Aquarius.
Exactly. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining, and we'll see you in the next call. Happy homework.
Thanks, everyone.